joined by Michael Callahan. I mean, Michael heads up, he's a pastor by trade, but at the moment you're working for the group that you founded, Freedom for Faith.
Well, partly true. I didn't found it, but I've been its first full-time executive director, Freedom for Faith.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Now, what are you trying to do?
We exist for one simple reason, that is to see religious freedom protected and promoted in Australia.
Mm-hmm. And it's been absolutely kind of ground zero, crucial fight time the last couple of months.
Yeah, and certainly, I mean, through the marriage debate, we saw it raised as an issue in the national conversation in a way that it hasn't for, a long time.
Mm. Now, let's just go back to the end of the marriage debate, and a whole lot of religious freedom issues were raised in the Parliament, and really as amendments to the same-sex marriage legislation, it was as it was put through, and they all got just kind of wiped out, and they said, we're going to deal with this through a religious freedom inquiry, for which people will be able to make submissions in the new year. That was the line late last year. An inquiry was set up. Philip Ruddock is heading that. And over the Christmas period, people have been preparing submissions. Now, you've been busy with the team from Freedom from Faith and Professor Patrick Parkinson preparing a submission. Tell us about that.
Yeah, well, the time frame is very tight. Mm-hmm. So they only announced the terms of reference on the 15th of December, and it's reporting back on the 31st of March.
Mm-hmm.
So just as everyone's kind of finishing their Christmas sermons and heading off for a well-earned break, we go into how do you respond to something that says, consider how religious freedom has dealt with under Australian laws. So we basically cancelled our Christmas New Year plans, put our heads down, and we've been working on it ever since to try and help equip others really to put their own submissions in or to endorse ours, but it's been a lot of work.
Now, super busy getting a coherent submission together by the 14th of February. Yours is in. It went in a couple of days ago.
Yesterday.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. So the pressure's off. But 14th of February, everyone's got to have theirs in. And then they've got 6 weeks after that to come up with a report?
Only 6 weeks. And as of last week, there were over 1,500 submissions in. So I think part of the challenge is for a small panel who have other full-time jobs, just to be able to see this thing is going to be a challenge.
Now, the messaging that I heard over Christmas was really, as a Christian, don't worry about this, you guys have got it covered. Whereas if you like, the opponents of freedom of religion were calling on people to put in lots of submissions. Now, maybe I didn't get the messaging right, but that was how I kind of felt I was hearing it in December, January. But that's changed now. Is that right?
Well, I think Australia shuts down between Boxing Day and Australia Day. So as soon as Australia Day was over, our phone started ringing hot saying, we hear there's a submission on and what do we need to do? And so I think people are really just, this week focusing on what do I need to do to see the kind of concerns I have appropriately put.
Mm-hmm. Okay, let's talk about what you've said in your submission. Mm-hmm. What are your concerns? I mean, and you're representing a broad range of coalition of views. What are your concerns about religious freedom in Australia?
Look, I think we'd say that by any global and historical standards, we've enjoyed remarkable freedoms.
Mm-hmm. Okay? We frequently pray, thank you, God, for the freedoms that we've got in this country.
And we're to pray for our rulers that we might be able to live quiet and godly lives. Mm-hmm. And thank God we've seen those prayers answered for a long, long time. But I think we have taken for granted some things. Mm-hmm. So there's not many laws that are actually there on the books to protect religious freedom. What protection there's been has been more a cultural compact, a societal, this is how we do life together.
Mm-hmm.
And I think not just for religious freedom, but for a whole range of issues, we're now seeing that's more contested now. Mm-hmm. How do we get along together?
And the various places where the issues have been contested over the last little while have really been, they've been dealt with as exemptions in anti-discrimination legislation. Do you know what I mean? I'm just thinking about in the wider society, we are gender blind in employment.
Mm-hmm.
But if you look at the Catholic Church, there's a very clear, they only employ male celibate priests, obviously there's not a gender blindness there. But it's an anti-discrimination exemption that's been allowed to happen.
Yeah, so almost nowhere in Australian law, apart from anti-discrimination, is where religious freedom comes up. And in that context, almost always it's, here's an exemption mm-hmm. So you don't need to do this, or here's an exception, you're not covered by these laws. And it gets harder and harder to defend that position, because mm-hmm. it becomes a kind of grudging concession to, well, why wouldn't you act in nice civil ways like mm. everyone else?
Mm.
It gets harder and harder to defend that.
Mm. I mean, we've got, this is your submission, Protecting Diversity. Mm-hmm. It looks thick. It looks like a lot of work.
106 pages.
So how are you trying to define religious freedom issues, not by just doing exemptions, but actually saying something positive?
Well, that's the key, really, is that switch to say, rather than a kind of grudging concession, part of our argument is that we could actually just move to see it as a positive right mm-hmm. in Australian law. So just not creating a new right that didn't exist before, but just saying Australia's entered treaties that say that religious freedom is important, that freedom of speech and association are important. Mm-hmm. So why don't we have a Commonwealth law that just acknowledges that reality? Mm-hmm. And then actually a lot of those exemptions and exceptions could actually be got rid of if there's a positive right there that says you've actually got the freedom to live out your faith mm-hmm. in a public kind of way.
Has that been argued before?
In different academic contexts from time to time, but the terms of this inquiry are far broader than anything we've really seen before.
Mm-hmm.
To look at federal and state laws, to see anything that touches on it. So it is it's a great opportunity to focus that argument into this political moment.
So it could actually end up being good for faith groups in Australia, this inquiry.
We want to be positive and to say, look, we actually think the church can give some leadership in this space. Mm-hmm. That isn't arguing for a privileged position, but doesn't want faith excluded as well. That mm-hmm. recognises that there are people with different beliefs and that we can find ways to get along.
Okay, let's talk about best and worst outcomes. Mm-hmm. What's the best outcome that the Christian Church could hope for?
That the panel takes seriously the concerns, that they listen to the different stakeholders there, that goes into recommendations, that we start seeing a different legal architecture in place. Mm-hmm. That just helps protect the cultural agreement we've got around this at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
That would be the best case.
Okay. Worst outcome. I mean, am I still going to be free to preach on Romans 1?
Yeah. The worst outcome is never about pastors and preaching.
Mm-hmm.
What takes place in a church on a Sunday morning will be the last thing that anyone will get to. It's much more what happens to the members of your congregation who are working in a school or a bank, and their freedom to live out their faith and or to be still fit to practice as a social worker or a counsellor, those kind of things.
Right. Okay. Well, let's go through those kind of one at a time. What are the issues? You said school, bank, social worker. Let's do school, and we'll do it under the heading of a teacher in a secular school and a teacher in a Christian school.
Mm-hmm.
Where are the religious freedom issues for a Christian teacher in a secular school? And what are you arguing for in that?
Well, we're coming to you from the heart of the inner west, as you know, in Sydney at the moment. And I know teachers around here who just don't wear crosses to school.
Mm-hmm.
Now, they don't have to wear crosses. They don't feel as though they have to. But quietly, they've decided not to, because they recognise that it just causes problems for them. It's almost like putting a target mm-hmm. on them. I don't want to overplay that, but that they've said to me, look, it blows our credibility straight away when we're teaching to have that, and to parents will think differently about us. So it's just easier not to wear a cross. Now, you can see how you can get from there to it's just easier not to speak publicly about mm-hmm. the faith, and just to keep these things private and quiet and, mm-hmm. and go to the church on Sunday where we can freely talk about the faith we have, but does it still
almost
belong
live
in the school?
Almost live a double life.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so the theologically you'd want to say, well, does the Lordship of Christ extend into the school in that mm-hmm. way? Forget the private public mm-hmm. for the moment and think, how do I think about being a Christian in this space?
I mean, just looking at your title, you've called it Protecting Diversity. Mm-hmm. And so I think your argument then is you want to see within the school community, within the staffing of the school community, a diverse range of views.
Sure.
And some of them would be Muslim views, some of them would be Christian views, some of them would be secular views, whatever. Do you know? Yeah. Okay, Christian schools, what are you hoping for there?
Well, I think one of the big challenges they're facing and have been for a while is around employment.
Mm-hmm.
And so in Victoria, right now in the territory, in different places, we're seeing an ongoing challenge that says you can have a Christian head or a Christian mm-hmm. chaplain, but not a gardener, not a history teacher, not a maths teacher. There's no need for them to be Christian. There's no mm-hmm. right for you to preference them.
Because gospel subjects is not on the maths syllabus.
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah. And you should just be following the law like everyone else. It varies from state to state as to mm-hmm. how that's played out.
Mm-hmm. Right. Now, what about Christian charities?
Yep. This one particularly comes up out of the marriage debate, where through the similar kind of jurisdictions around the world, we've seen charities, even in New Zealand, who've lost their charitable status over this very issue, that if they teach something which is against the public law on marriage now, they no longer going to be recognised as mm-hmm. a charity.
Now, my observation is that the mainstream denominations, their big concern in the religious freedom debate, given that we're still free to preach what we would want in church, is over their right to employ people in schools who hold their faith position, and their right to employ people in their charity organisations who hold their faith position. Have I read the landscape right there?
Look, I'd say that's certainly a big concern. I wouldn't say it's it.
Yeah.
So it could come
and
up
is that under
in
threat?
Different ways. Potentially, yes. Yeah. So if the changes that we've seen in the law have happened really at a speed and scale that few believe. So,
because if we put it on a continuum, I mean, most of the stuff we've been hearing in the debate has been, what if I'm a Christian photographer who wants to, who's being asked to photograph a same-sex wedding? Do you know, am I free to have my own beliefs and not exercise my photography skills that mm-hmm. day? Then I suppose you'd say debates over faith organisations, whether or not they're allowed to have people of their faith as their employees, in not necessarily direct faith teaching roles, but ancillary support roles, and then right up here, what faith leaders can say in their worship communities. Do you know? So is that's right?
Yeah. So I think everyone would say, look, you can have a freedom to worship in church.
Yeah, we're not debating that.
No.
We're not debating whether or not.
Although, interestingly, if you think about other faiths, mm-hmm. There'd be a lot of Australians now who would say Muslims shouldn't have that freedom.
Mm-hmm.
We should not build mosques. We should not allow them to meet, because their very presence and their meeting together actually threatens our way of life
mm-hmm.
And is a threat to the society.
But I think you would be saying that because I'm arguing for freedom in faith in principle, I've got to argue for their freedom as well as my freedom.
Yeah.
You know, freedom for all faith groups.
Yeah.
Now, we've got a question that's come in from Lenny Jo McMillan. She says, hi, Mike. Are you assisting schools and churches to write contracts which will help navigate employment? You might be answering this now, e.g. they don't need to be Christian, though they do need to hold upright values at school and in public, and the right to dismiss when the contract is broken. They're not a discrimination issue. Yeah. So how do people write their employment contracts there?
It's an issue for schools, and it's going to vary from jurisdiction to jurisdiction.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to give out legal advice here over the internet. We are talking to some groups,
uh-huh.
But we're also referring people to really good lawyers that work in the space as well, that can give specific legal advice around particular problems and issues.
Right.
What we are saying, though, is that there's more exposure generally in this space, so that they're exactly the right kind of questions to be asking.
Now, as you in Freedom for Faith have attempted, I mean, you've put this weighty submission in, and really you've done it with the support of a number of different denominational groups, and then a number of other faith groups have come in behind and mm-hmm. written supporting comments and that kind of thing. My observation of trying to get Christians to agree on anything is that's pretty difficult, and it's a bit like herding cats. Mm. I take it that you've encountered a range of views let's do the range of views under the Christian umbrella, then we'll talk about range of views in the secular world. I take it within the Christian umbrella, there'd be some on the right of Christianity who are saying we've really got to be worrying about the wedding photographer. Mm-hmm. And there are some on the left of Christianity who are saying there's no problem whatsoever. And you've been trying to coalesce both of those extremes. Is that right?
Yeah, I think, look, what we're trying to do is put the clearest possible case we can, mm-hmm. the most compelling one, and then just seeing who's able to align with it. Mm-hmm. You know, so if we can make it as broad as possible and make it real, mm-hmm. so that it connects with the lived experience of people, mm-hmm. in Australia, then we are seeing a range of people sign up for it. So that's been encouraging. But yeah, there's always that tension, mm-hmm. How broad is the church, mm. you know? And so we find that within the church, between churches, and then with other faith groups as well, for mm-hmm. sure.
Okay. So you've been... let's just run through what your particular arguments are that you're taking to the commissioner in your report. What are the big things you're arguing for?
Well, a lot of it is kind of setting the scene, mm-hmm. and understanding what it is, trying to frame it in the right kind of ways. And then there's eight kind of specific recommendations,
okay.
that we
let's
argue
for.
Yeah. I may need to consult. There've been a few late nights. But look, one of them certainly, and one of the big ones that leads us into it, is really thinking differently, mm-hmm. about the issue before us. So we would say rather than having, you know, this exemption kind, mm-hmm. of model, it's better to go the way
to frame it positively.
Ones,
yeah. Yep.
Better to redefine discrimination, mm-hmm. so that we kind of give a right for people to have a school that lives out
its faith
its
commitment.
Faith, yeah. Just in the same way that you wouldn't expect Greenpeace to be employing part-time harpoonists.
No.
Know, but
and they shouldn't. They shouldn't have to have
that. No.
Yeah.
To do that kind of thing. How would that take place? Well, the international treaties we've got, let's have the Commonwealth actually put them in a law, mm-hmm. and recognise them. Not create new rights, but recognise them. And doing that will kind of trump the state problems we're having.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, I mean, there's some technical ways that I won't bore you with the details of, that we argue for it, but that's the general direction, mm-hmm. that we're heading. So alongside that, we would say it'd be good for employers to have a positive duty to have reasonable accommodation for employees with, you know, religious belief, mm-hmm. so that if someone does need to pray, or if someone wears a cross, that shouldn't be a sackable offence. Mm-hmm. You know, we should actually
you should
try
be able
and
to be a bus driver who wears a cross,
sure. or a turban, or mm-hmm. whatever, yep. it might be for you. Mm-hmm. You know, there are limits to it, and we say that clearly, that, you know, there are limits for security and public, mm-hmm. safety. It's not an absolute kind of right. But a lot of it is kind of saying, look, let's actually treat this seriously as a human right and not see it as a second order.
Mm-hmm.
So that if there's going to be, you know, a commissioner for the aged within the anti-discrimination framework, let's have a commissioner for religious freedom as well. So let's actually follow through on some of the things that we say that we believe and we're committed to.
So a commissioner for religious freedom, hmm. that's a new idea, or new idea for me. Mm-hmm. What would they do? How would that work?
It would be a bully pulpit kind of role. So you'd be saying you have a responsibility to talk about religious freedom at state and federal levels as people are drawing up laws. Have you considered this? Have you thought about that? Consult with faith leaders. Bring them together. Have that dialogue that says, look, this is an important part of the way we do life together. So let's actually just make sure there's someone with a particular focus on it.
Mm-hmm. I mean, Tim Wilson had that human rights commissioner portfolio, and I think he used that quite well to advocate for human rights. Although I can't remember the name of the person before him or the person after him.
Yeah, so Ed Santo's doing that role at the moment. So within the Human Rights Commission, there have been different people who from time to time have done some things, and sometimes, you know, they've actually been part of the problem. Mm-hmm. Sometimes they've been part of a solution. But to actually have someone with the responsibility there would be
to
a good
agitate
thing.
For that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. The risk, of course, is what if it's a bad appointment? But that's, mm-hmm. always the case with, mm. with these kind of roles.
Next one.
The big one that captures a lot, really, is that shift to positive rights and the way that it's recognised by the Commonwealth. Mm-hmm. That would actually get rid of a lot of the problems we've talked about this morning at a state level, a lot of the state discrimination issues.
I said before that over the Christmas period, I'd felt no encouragement to me as either an individual Christian or as a pastor to be encouraging people to write and engage with this inquiry. But in the last fortnight, I've had 4 emails from different Christian organisations, my denomination, the ACL, the family people, various people, saying, can I as an individual make a submission to this? I mean, I'm not going to be able to write a 100-page document that can stack up. Should I do that? Should I bother? What's your advice there?
Yeah, we really need 2 things to happen. One is we need to say, look, here's a really good set of solutions. Mm-hmm. But
so you'd like me to write, say, Patrick Parkinson's written a good thing?
If you believe that is, yeah. So have a look. There's an executive summary. There won't be a test. Right. You don't need to read 106 pages. But if you like what's there, absolutely, it'd be great to mention that. But there's no point in some ways us saying, look, here's a really good solution if the panel and if parliamentarians don't believe that there's actually a problem. Mm-hmm. So this is where grassroots kind of submissions can be just 1 page that goes in and says, do you know what? I'm a social worker in South Australia and this has been my experience, and I have felt freedoms have changed here. Mm-hmm. Because at the moment, there would be a lot of parliamentarians who would just say, religious freedom is just not an issue in Australia. Mm-hmm. and need to be persuaded. And the way that people are persuaded is just by local compelling stories. So into the submission and copied to your local MP.
Mm-hmm. So I go back to the one you mentioned before. If I'm a teacher in the inner west, mm-hmm. and I'm feeling like I just have no freedom to be who I am, then I write in. Mm. Now, we're calling this podcast The Pastor's Heart. And so we're actually trying to get to the heart of the pastor. And you've been a pastor. And I'm going to ask you about some sad moments and happy moments in the ministry that you've done. What's some of the saddest stuff that you've had to walk through as a Christian pastor?
I mean, there's the burial of children. Mm-hmm. The counselling families with suicide. I mean, there's those traumatic kind of things, mm-hmm. But in some ways, you're there to bring God's comfort into that situation. So although it's terrible for them and it's an awful situation, that's not as hard in some ways as seeing...
There's a professional detachment. Although you're in there, there's still a professional detachment.
Yeah, that's true.
What about you walking through a particularly difficult situation with God?
Yeah, look, I think the things that are hard for me have been more, you're seeing, and I think of a particular friend in ministry failing and marriage and ministry just kind of complete mess, and someone that was close. So seeing those kind of things, seeing people who...
Someone who's just really close to you, that you've looked up to, felt as, well, either as a peer or...
Peer.
Yeah.
Yeah. So those kind of things. And I think most pastors would recognise those kind of things. But sometimes that's quick and dramatic. And then other times it's been the slow motion, bad decisions that people take over years, where you just see their love for Jesus kind of choked out by other things.
Mm. What about things that have brought you real joy?
Yeah, look, I think the reason I came into ministry was I was convinced that the tomb was empty and Jesus had walked out of it, and so that hasn't changed, and so I think I've always kind of looked to that. And seeing other people come to faith like that as well, I could think of one guy in particular who came from a Muslim background to faith. While he was a student here in Australia, and just being able to read the Bible with him as the Spirit was at work in his life, that was just an incredible privilege to see those kind of things happen. Yeah.
You're telling me that man coming to Christian faith transformed your church.
Yeah. So, and particularly the situation he was in was coming out of a a Muslim family and country where following Christ was quite a costly thing. So he's still in hiding from his family. And it really changed the way the little church that we're in kind of understood persecution and what the cost of following Jesus, and gave them a different take as well on kind of Muslim Christian issues and how to think through that, because it wasn't, that's an out there kind of issue, but it was, this was a person now that I'm thinking of.
Yeah. I mean, when you say that and you talk about the persecution that Christians undergo in other countries, when we're talking religious freedom here in Australia, we're not talking that order of magnitude, are we? Do you know?
No, but nor do we want that to be the measure.
Right.
So we don't want to say, well, that's not as bad as North Korea. Let's be thankful. No, we say, do you know what? The freedoms we've got here are wonderful and precious and good. So let's be thankful for them, and let's not take them for granted and see them slip.
Do you think we have taken them for granted?
Yeah.
In what ways?
Oh, look, I think the fact that we've thought, let's think ministry is just about prayer and proclamation and people and other things starting with P, but not had to worry too much about the platform. So we've just thought, you know, you can go and you'll be able to start, plant a church in a school, not have to buy a building. You'll be able to go into this workplace and do these things. And a lot of those assumptions now are being stripped away. So we're finding them more under challenge. And if you'd sent someone as a missionary to another country, they would have realised, well, we won't just be able to go into this situation. We're going to have to negotiate.
And build the platform. And secure the platform.
Yeah. So a lot of our assumptions about the way ministry has been just always done just are no longer true.
Right. Okay. Michael Callaghan, thanks very much for talking to us today.
Thanks, Dominic.
My guest has been Michael Callaghan from Freedom for Faith. And look, coming up over the next couple of weeks on The Pastor's Heart, next week we're going to have as our guest Evan McFarlane, and he really has been heading up the Christian ministry area of raising up ministry apprentices and training ministry apprentices at St. Paul's Carlingford. And he is the guy that I particularly look to for wisdom in this whole area of raising and training young ministry apprentices. This year at Village Church, we've got 3 ministry apprentices. Last year, we had 5. And so I'm really, really keen on this process. And I like talking to someone like Evan because he sharpens me and makes me think more cleanly, more clearly about how I'm doing what I'm doing. We're also going to be talking in the next couple of weeks with Peter Tong, part-time at Moore College, part-time at St. Andrew's Wurrunga. He's going to be talking to us about Luke's portrayal of women in the Gospels and in Acts, and how scholarship has changed in its mindset on that over the last few decades. Sandy Galea is going to join us from MBM at Rudy Hill, and we're looking forward to talking to her about grief and helping children through grief. When I rang up Sandy and asked her to talk with me on The Pastor's Heart, I was expecting to get to talk to her about structuring a children's ministry and things we can look out for and pitfalls and how to do it better and making teams work and all that kind of thing. And we're going to get her back in a few months to talk about that. But when we started to talk together, it became clear that it would be super helpful to ask her questions about kids and grief. And so we're going to do that in a couple of weeks' time. So I hope you'll stay in touch with us on The Pastor's Heart and put your questions up on the Facebook page so that you can have your question answered. And of course, it's available now on podcast at thepastorsheart.net. Thanks for joining us. See you next week. Cheers. Hey, if you're listening on Apple Podcasts, we would love it if you could hop over to the Apple Podcasts app and give us a rating and review. That helps us in the rankings and lets other people discover The Pastor's Heart. And again, if you are able to help us out by being a financial partner, go to our Patreon link, patreon.com/thepastorsheart.